Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Ray Graff. We talk about the great outdoors today, and welcome back Jeremy Hurst. Jeremy is the game management section head for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and we are joined by biologist Angelina Ross, the DEC's avian and mammal diversity unit leader in Albany. If you have a question about things that you see loping along in your backyard or in the neighborhood, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jeremy Hurst, Angie Ross, and your questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing wildlife today with Jeremy Hurst, the game management section head for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, who facilitates the research, outreach, and management planning for New York's big game, small game, and fur-bearing wildlife. Previously, he coordinated New York's management programs for white-tailed deer, black bear, and moose management. Also with us today is biologist Angelina Ross, who serves as the DEC's avian and mammal diversity unit leader in Albany, focused mainly on the conservation of endangered and threatened species. For the last 20 years, one of her focuses has been on conservation of New York's spruce grouse population. And if you have a question for our crew today, the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org as we get rolling along here. Angelina Ross, Jeremy Hurst, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So what's new? What's happening? What's going on in the great outdoors? It's hunting seasons now, yeah?
It is, but you know, fall's approaching, and fall's an exciting time in the wildlife world. We love seeing birds start to migrate through the area, the leaves changing colors. I've got a wet marsh behind my house, and the red maples are already changing. The cattails are drying out. It's really a pretty time of year we're coming into, and a lot of fun to watch wildlife this time of year.
Yeah, and so many things are going on with wildlife right now. Physiological changes, birds are leaving, as Jeremy mentions, and yeah.
So you've been watching the birds leave. I love watching the birds. It's very exciting. This spruce grouse thing, is this a big time for them?
Oh, all year is a big time for them, I would say. Yeah. I mean, they're action-packed lives, you know, going on.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, in the spring, they're breeding. They do these really cool displays where they puff out their chest feathers and their neck feathers. They look like a cobra. They bounce around from the ground to the trees. They're not super vocal, but, you know, and then they breed. They have 4 to 7 chicks per nest. They nest only one time per year. And then as you go into the fall, they're in the summertime, they're eating berries and things that we want to eat. And then they transition around this time of the year to needles. So they're eating spruce needles now.
Okay.
And then they shift in the winter to all balsam fir, pretty much.
Now these, my very sketchy memory holds true, these have a very limited habitat, right? They have to be in specific spots.
Yeah, and we have them in New York State, really only in the northwestern section of the Adirondack Park.
And why is that special?
Well, that's where we have these large expanses of boreal forest, so conifer-dominated landscapes. And generally, they're existing in these areas that are wetlands. That's what we have left for boreal. I mean, we also have high-elevation boreal in the high peaks, but they don't tend to live there.
It's a shame.
Between black spruce and fir in those areas?
That's a good question. It's mostly black spruce. I don't know if it's, I couldn't guess.
It's a real shame that we don't have our cameras anymore, because I am told by someone that you do an excellent impression of one, visual, not sound.
I can do a sound of a male.
You know what? If you can do that, you are the absolute top of the show. Go ahead.
I have to get the right posture.
Okay, here we go. Look at that.
That's it?
That's an agitated male.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like my children answering a question in school.
So no drumming like the rough grouse do.
No. They're one of the least vocal of the the birds.
All right, here's one that's not about birds, but I thought it was. I was out back on the patio, and I said, oh, my God, there's a goose. Why? How is there a goose here? And it was hissing and honking. I said to my youngest daughter, come out here. There's a goose out here. I can't find it. It was a squirrel that had an acorn in its mouth. I didn't know they vocalized like that.
Yeah, squirrels can make a lot of noise.
I mean, it was loud. I mean, hissing, maybe because it had the acorn in its mouth, it was hissing and maybe couldn't breathe. I don't know. But it was really impressive. Can either of you do a squirrel?
I don't think so. One time I cornered a squirrel and it chattered its teeth at me, and that was interesting.
They chatter.
Yeah.
And whenever they see my cat, they'll chatter.
Yeah, and if you walk in the woods this time of year, you can actually hear them breaking open the acorns and chewing on them. You can hear them gnawing the tops off the acorns.
It's pretty exciting stuff. We're joined today by Jeremy Hurst and Angelina Ross of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Got an email, press release from you guys, I guess earlier in the week, perhaps. And it says, DEC announces start of early big game hunting seasons. What are we hunting right now?
Yeah, so actually there's a couple hunting seasons that are in play. But for the big game side of things, we have a deer season and a bear season that's happening in parts of the state and only in specific parts of the state. Most hunting seasons don't begin until October for archery equipment and then sometime in November for firearm equipment. But in a few areas where we need to reduce deer numbers, and also reduce bear numbers, we have specific seasons in middle of September. And so there's some portions of central New York and the Finger Lakes area, Lake Plains of western New York, where we want to reduce deer numbers. And we have this special antlerless opportunity or opportunity for hunters to take antlerless deer with a firearm in September. Likewise, in the Catskills, where we have more bears than we want, and to reduce the impacts that bear have on human environments we have a special bear hunting season for about 2 weeks in mid-September.
Do we know what the bear population is in general for the Northeast?
Yeah, so for New York, we roughly say between 6,000 and 8,000. We use that number pretty loosely because we don't have precise estimates, but we track the trends in bear harvest as an indicator of population trends. And in portions of the Southeast and portions of the Catskills, we also interact with the public to try to understand what their desires are for bear populations. And population desires are to reduce, and the impacts and such are too high, and yet bear populations still seem to be growing, and so we're trying to reduce the bear numbers.
You know, RFK Jr. aside, do people eat bear?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you?
I have, actually.
And what do they
taste
like?
Not a whole bear, but no. I have eaten parts of a bear.
I'm not into it.
No, I mean,
it's too greasy.
Oh, really? Have you tried?
Yeah.
I think for bears, it's a real challenge because they have so much fat that you have to be really careful about processing the bear. And so in warm weather, be right ready to cool that hide down or that carcass down quickly so the meat doesn't spoil. Even all that insulating layer of the fat on a cool day packed in ice, that insulation can keep the internal body temperature of the bear too warm that the meat can spoil. Or that fat stays on the hide and can become a rancid. And so that's part of the problem. But if it's prepared well,
yeah.
Bear is excellent.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. And so Angie's kind of grimacing
same,
here.
That same story.
And but so the bear I've had was really fantastic meat.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so you mentioned antlerless deer.
Sure. Does and fawns.
Assuming they're maybe the same, are there the same numbers of male and female deer in general?
Well, they're generally born at about a 50-50 ratio, maybe slightly heavier towards females. But their survivorship is different. Males, just like with humans, tend not to survive quite as well as
really?
Does. Are.
It's not because people hunt them.
Well, that happens too, but it's also they make some bad choices. And maybe they move around a lot more, so they're more vulnerable to getting to interacting with predators or vehicles, right? And then they also fight amongst themselves, and sometimes they hurt each other, and so they're more susceptible to mortality.
You know, rarely do we see a lot of deer in my neighborhood, and usually it's the mom and the kids running around. And this year, for maybe about a month ago, for several days, three male deers, and they had big racks of what do they call them, antlers on their heads.
You almost said horns.
Horns. It's not horns.
It's not horns.
Right? No. But do they stick together? I thought they were territorial and they all had their own territory.
Well, so deer do this thing where the males will stay together through the summertime. And the female groups will stay together as well pretty much all year. And so these bachelor groups of males will be together through the summer. And then as we come into the fall and approach breeding season, they'll break up and start dispersing across the landscape. But the female groups, what happens is a doe will have her offspring, and those offspring will stay with her with overlapping home ranges for about a year. The female young tend to set up home ranges near their mother, whereas the young males will then leave and go find someplace else. And so it's not uncommon to see groups of males together in generally late summer would be where you see them in July, August, and September, and then they start to break up and spread out. But it's common to see family groups of does and fawns together all year long.
All right. Now, we've often heard, if we watch anything on the Discovery Channel or anything, you know, you don't get near mama bear when the little kids are near, or the cubs. Are deer like that? Because we have mama and the little ones, and I don't want to get too close. They come very close. They don't really care out in suburbia. They'll just walk around. But I don't want to get in between a mom and a little deer, whatever they call them.
Fawns?
Fawn, that's it.
Yeah, well, so the does can be defensive of their fawns when the fawns are really young.
Okay.
This time of year, I wouldn't expect the same sort of reaction from does. The fawns are very mobile and will run away from you just the same. They may seem like they get pretty close while you're inside the house or stepping out of your car, but if you took a couple steps towards them, I bet they would leave pretty quickly.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We're joined by Angelina Ross and Jeremy Hurst of the New York DEC, and we'll be back with your questions at 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined by Angelina Ross and Jeremy Hurst of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And we'll do one email and then we'll go to the phones. This is from E. Anonymous. When I look at posts on Nextdoor apps, people post complaints about what they refer to as misbehaving bears stealing from their bird feeders. Please clarify that the people who are making the bird feeders available are the ones who are teaching bears to come into people's backyards, endangering people as well as the bears. I think E said it. I mean, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, you know, people use terminology that may be misleading, saying problem bear or nuisance bear, bad bear behavior, that sort of thing. And the reality is, as the writer suggests, is that bears are doing the thing that bears do. They're finding easy food, and they're taking advantage of what we kind of leave as messy landscapes, whether it be leaving birdseed lay out in the ground or available for bears when birds don't really need the feed, or keeping our garbage outside. The messes we make easy food for wildlife, and it creates other problems. And so the real issue for bears is that those easy food sources can train a bear to find food near humans. And so the bears will become habituated to human environments, and while Angie may clean up her space, if I haven't cleaned up mine, it'll come right down the road to my place and make the same mess there. And so, you know, we have to do our part to coexist with wildlife. And unfortunately, what ultimately happens is when bears learn and become habitual with these behaviors, they can create a mess for people, but they can also ultimately hurt themselves by putting themselves in risky situations or becoming aggressive in their behavior. And then we have to intervene and sometimes kill the bear.
And most of the time they will not become aggressive?
Well, there's always that risk. Most bears, if you can scare them away and clean up the space, won't continue to seek it out. And they'll go find other food. But if it's perpetual and bears are always getting fed by either intentional or unintentional feeding from people, they may become more aggressive.
Now, no one would intentionally feed a bear, right?
Well, unfortunately, there are some folks that do that, and
to could, what end?
To fairly extreme ends. I've seen situations where people have had to put barbed wire up around their house, electrify their doormats, cover their house with their windows with wire mesh to try to prevent the bears from coming in. But yet, they continued to supply food outside their homes, and it created a real hassle for the neighbors and the whole community, and can be real challenging situations for us to deal with.
You mentioned electric doormats. Where can I get one of those? That's a very great idea.
Yeah, your post office might not like that.
Yeah, the number here is 800-348-2551. Angelina Ross and Jeremy Hurst are here from the New York State DEC. I wrote something next to your name, Angelina, and I forgot what it was referring to. I just wrote factoids. What factoids?
Well, it is the fall. So we talked a little bit about spruce grouse, so this is a fun factoid. So in the fall, as I mentioned, their diet is starting to become more needle full,
right.
Whatever,
yep.
You know, almost 100% needles. And then as they go into the winter time, it's 100% needles. So, I mean, that's cool. Like, they're taking vegetation and turning it into grouse meat, right? And while that's happening, their digestive tracts are lengthening up to 40%.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's just stretching out or growing?
It's growing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and they have these blind sacs called ceca, and they grow as well, and that helps them digest proteins and whatever else is in the needles that makes it good to eat.
Do they have stones in their gizzards or whatever they call it?
Their gizzards grow as well, and it's not just stretching. It's like an actual growth of material.
Amazing. You
know? Yeah, and it's not the only bird that does that. There are other grouse in North America that do that, dusky grouse, sooty grouse, California quail, and they all have this shift from berries to needle-like diets in the winter. It's kind of cool.
I want to thank Frank for writing in. Subject heading, Ray Graff, ignorance. The plural of deer is deer, not deers. All right, thanks, Frank. And diplomatically put, you dirty Ray. Patrick in LaGrangeville, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah, you stole one of my questions as to the about the bear population. Now, do you have any specific numbers for, like, bear and deer in around, you know, Dutchess and Ulster and Orange County?
So not specific numbers, but I can talk generally. Area, sort of particularly east of the Hudson area, Dutchess and Putnam counties, bears are more numerous now than they were 10 or 15 years ago. But it's still somewhat of an expanding population into that area. And of course, you're probably experiencing some bears that are cross border with Connecticut, particularly on the eastern side of the counties there. But the bear populations have been growing. We expanded hunting opportunities into that area several years ago to accommodate that growth and to prevent bear populations from getting too large there. Deer populations in the southern Hudson Valley generally are quite robust, and we have challenges in lots of the Hudson Valley to manage deer populations at the levels that they really should be. And so we've been increasing our effort to get hunters to take antlerless deer and have more of an impact on the population there.
Yeah, that was my other question, is I don't understand why they don't have a longer season. And I mean, I used to have 20 to 30 I lived on a small eight acre property, a little gentleman's farm and whatnot. And anyway, I mean, there'd be 20 or 30 of them, and they weren't hurting anything because the field was lush and green and they were happy to eat. But they're, you know what I mean? Every time I get myself a new car, the first thing that happens is I hit a deer.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting
anyway,
you say that they weren't hurting anything because really some of the largest impacts from deer go unseen by most people. It's easy to see impacts on crop damage when farmers are harvesting their fields, but deer eat wild vegetation, forest saplings and seedlings, and wildflowers, and nobody sees that. And so one of the real impacts that we see, particularly in Dutchess County, is that our forest understory has been really decimated by deer in a lot of places, and the native tree species and wildflower species are being replaced by invasive species that are less palatable to deer. And change in our ecosystem that deer are influencing very negatively that most people don't perceive.
Yeah, it affects ground nesting birds as well.
Yeah, substantially.
Patrick, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Jeremy Hurst and Angelina Ross from the New York State DEC are with us today. And we'll go to Niskayuna. Gene, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm having trouble hearing you. Is there some reason?
Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Okay. Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. Anyway, my issue, I think, is primarily about red foxes. For about 4 years, I had a breeding pair in my backyard that would kind of patrol around my garden every morning, so I didn't have any problems with, voles and shrews getting into the garden, which was very nice. In January of this year, which is, I guess, breeding season for them, at 2 o'clock in the morning, one morning, the screeching was like some animal was being torn apart. And after that, the next morning, there were two young foxes, about a year old, going around my garden, calling. My guess was that mom had been attacked some way and didn't make it. Wow. I never saw any more foxes around my yard until about a month and a half ago, and I wasn't even sure it was a fox. It was out on the cul-de-sac. The animal was staggering somewhat, really emaciated. The tail didn't have any fur on it. And when I talked to my neighbor about it, she said she had heard that there's mange going around in the fox population. Can you address that?
Okay.
And if so, I have a dog. Is it dangerous if I walk my dog and she sniffs where a mangy fox has been?
That's very interesting. All right, who wants this one?
I'll take it.
Okay.
So, we do have mange documented in New York, and, that could be what you observed. As far as your dog goes, if you have a house outside, like a dog house, and there's there's some use, so you wouldn't want your dog to, actually my dad's dog got mange from from hanging out in a dog house where there were some wild animals that were mangy, and we didn't know what was
going
on.
How do you get rid of it?
If she were to go through a brushy area where a mangy fox had been, would she pick it up? I mean, mange is what, scabies?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a mite.
Okay.
And so there's potential if there were a dead fox that the dog, rubbed around. And dogs are kind of gross in that way, that they find smelly stuff in the woods and then they just roll around like it's the best thing.
I always have her on a leash, so she can't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where, connecting with your vet. If you were suspicious of anything, connecting with the vet and get it treated.
Yeah. Could I just, if I wanted to, or anyone wanted to report some odd behavior, do you have a phone number?
We do.
At the Department of Environmental Conservation?
I can give you our wildlife number. I don't know the best number for our wildlife health program. It's on our website. You can search for Wildlife Health, New York DEC, and there's both a email submission form as well as phone numbers there. But our general wildlife line can redirect, and that is 518-402-8883 for any reports of sick or injured wildlife.
You get that,
8883?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, that's really great. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. I've seen a mangy fox in our neighborhood a few years ago, but this year I was out very early, just before dawn, and saw a really healthy one go up our hill. How can I tell if they're in the neighborhood? What sounds do they make? You don't have to make the sound, but you can.
They do make a very cool screaming sound.
Do they?
Yeah, we need Mandy back on to make the fox call.
She's
the pro. But yeah, they sound like a woman screaming in the woods or a child screaming in the woods. It's pretty intense and can be, almost disturbing for some folks that aren't familiar with it.
Now, do they pass through, or are they going to be, if you see one, chances are it's in the neighborhood?
Oh, fox don't have that large of a home range, and suburban areas with some wooded landscape are great areas for fox. Lots of food sources, and so it's not uncommon to see them in the area here.
But will they be out mainly at night, or will if we see one in the day, is that a red flag?
No, it's not a red flag. In particular, during the summer, people often think of fox or coyotes that they see in the summer. If they see them in the daytime, they think immediately, oh, they're rabid. They must be having some neurological issue, and that's not necessarily the case. It's really common in the summer to see red fox and coyotes in hay fields that have been cut because they're out there looking for mice and voles. It's just another hunting season for them.
We're joined today by Jeremy Hurst and Angelina Ross from the New York State DEC. Our phone number is 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. If you can keep them to a paragraph or two. I got a really long email here, and maybe I'll save it for the end of the show. It's about snakes in a basement. But you want that one?
Snakes?
All right, here we go. All right, this is Angie's choice.
Okay.
Probably from my wife.
I don't know who this is from. doesn't say. Maybe this is not in the wheelhouse of the guests, but despite living with groundhogs, foxes, skunks, homesteading right on the property, constant traffic and raccoons, deer, bear, turkeys, the only question that comes to mind this afternoon is about snakes who have taken up residence in the basement. Over the past couple of years, I've been finding the molted skins of what has been identified as black rat snake around the unfinished cellar. Couldn't ever determine whether they were from a single specimen or if there was a larger population. Just this weekend, I found two molted skins entangled behind tools, hanging on a pegboard with forays up into the insulation of the unfinished ceiling that turned out to be about the same size, making me think there are probably two of them. There's more.
Okay.
I've had no issue tolerating the snake presence. The snake is non-poisonous, non-aggressive. They pretty much keep mice out of the house. But considering that the untangled length of those molted skins were each a bit over 6 feet, and the actual specimens are probably somewhat bigger, since the molting leaves the skin sort of accordioned rather than fully stretched, is there some danger I might be overlooking by winking at their presence in the basement?
I'm obsessed with this house. I want to live there.
Okay, well, I'll give you the email address. You can follow up later.
So, you know, as the emailer pointed out, I mean, it's a benefit, really. I mean, they're eating mice. They're cleaning up down there. I wish I had snakes in the basement.
Okay.
You know? But, I mean, you just have to be diligent about sealing up holes, you know, during the active season when they're not in there. You know, they're probably going in and out. If there's any vegetation outside, you can keep that short. Don't keep things around the outside of your house piled up, wood piles, you know, old wood, whatever, like lumber, that kind of thing. Yeah. Snakes love that stuff. And I don't know.
We actually had this in my house, too.
Did
really?
You?
Yeah. And
I'm jealous.
A couple funny stories from it. But what we found was we had a block foundation and there were some cracks or chinks right at the sill plate where the snakes could get in. And then they could actually, you know, navigate through the block foundation. And if there were any access points inside, same sort of thing, where there's a little bit of mortar missing at the sill plate, then they could get in. We found, as we were doing some remodeling work, a snake skin in the ceiling.
Wow.
Actually had a milk snake in one of my boots one time, which
wow.
was interesting when I put it on. And so that was a surprise, but
wow.
kind of a fun surprise.
You know, this person seems like... You go ahead first.
I was going to say, the cool thing about milk snakes is that they're a type of king snake, and they actually eat other snakes.
Oh, cool.
What?
That
yeah.
is cool. No, but this person seems to want the snakes. Any
it
problems with
way.
That?
No.
No?
You just got to be willing to find the skins.
Okay.
Sometimes that's a surprise.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm curious how they know it's a black rat snake. I mean, I know they get very big, but if you examine the skins, you'll see a line in the center of each of the scales. It's called a keel. And black rat snakes are really arboreal, so they like to go up in trees. So they have keeled scales that
okay.
allow them to climb.
Presumably somebody made that identification
yeah.
and not our emailer. All right, one more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Peggy. Removing raccoons from my attached garage. For 3 different days, a different raccoon has entered my garage through my cat door. Get rid of the cat door. What's the best way to remove them from the garage as well as my rural property?
Well, it's kind of a funny scenario. As Ray says, closing up the cat door would be one way temporarily. Opening the garage door, letting the animal get an escape path, and then just finding a way to keep them out. So one option would be to contact a nuisance wildlife control operator, as these are professionals who deal with these types of things on a regular basis and can help evaluate the whole situation. More than likely, there's some food that's there, whether it's the cat food or garbage that the raccoon's smelling. And so cleaning up the space so that there's no real attractant for the raccoons to be there, and then just make sure that you're able to close up the space when they're out, prevent their entry.
I have nothing further.
I got to be honest with you. Raccoons are pretty nasty. I'm not speaking out of school because Joe's talked about it on the air, but apparently when he was a child, Joe Donahue had a pet raccoon, which I think is just completely demented. But that's another story. I remember when I was a kid, we had one in our garage. Did I tell you this story?
I don't think so.
My father said, we got to get this out of here. So he took a broomstick and kind of nudged it, and the thing bit through the broomstick. And then we said, yeah, we're going to call animal control.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
But they are pretty amazing creatures. Just watching the dexterity that a raccoon has with its hands is really remarkable.
Let's take a break here on that happy thought. 800-348-2551 is our number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We go outdoors metaphorically with Angie Ross and Jeremy Hurst. Back in a flash. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Outdoor Day with Angelina Ross and Jeremy Hurst from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. We were in the break, and Angie, you said if you want to keep the animals at bay, put a radio on your garage.
Yeah, I have advised people to do that in the past when they have raccoons or skunks or whatever nearby or in their garage or under a shed in their backyard or whatever. And nobody has ever called back and said, hey, that didn't work. What else can I do? But that could be just
interesting. I mean, you know what? Try that, folks. I mean, listen, I've been driving people away for years, and so I'm sure it'll work with animals as well. And speaking of driving people away, if you would like to have less Fun Drive in October, Fun Drive is coming up. You can feed the lockbox right now. Every dollar we raise at WAMC.org, you can do it right now. Every dollar we raise will shorten the on-air Fun Drive, and then we'll be having regular programming at more of it. Let's go to Livingston Manor. Jan, you're on.
Hi. I had one comment about the bear population. And I guess I would ask, how does a person say that they want less bear hunting?
Sounds like you just did.
Hello.
hang on. Cool. I think you stumped the panel for a moment, Jan. go ahead, Jeremy.
So we help or set our objectives for managing bears using input that we receive from the public. And that can be informal input, just like you just provided, but it is often through some scientific surveys that we do of the public at large. And so we will send out surveys periodically to the public in New York State, all over the state, to assess what the preferences are for bear management in those different regions. And in part, it's based on not just their preference of whether they want to see more or fewer bears, but what are the impacts that people are experiencing? Are the impacts tolerable? Are the impacts excessive? And then, of course, why that may be the case and whether it's something that they can take ownership of or whether the bear population as a whole needs to be adjusted.
Okay, because I don't know anybody that would want less bear, but that's not scientific or anything. And then I had another question. So earlier in the season, in the middle of the summer, for about 6 weeks, every time I took a walk, there were dead moles along the side of the road. I mean, just like on a single walk, I'd see 8 or 10
wow.
dead ones just lined up on the side of the road, and we couldn't figure out why.
I have no idea. I've seen one, a star-nosed mole, dead on the road, but that was the only one I've ever
poison?
Seen. And I haven't really heard of, I mean, it could be it's, somebody with rat poison out, maybe?
I mean, we're very much in the woods. It's hard to imagine. And it was stretched out over about, I don't know, a mile and a half or something. It
well,
was weird.
Anybody?
You stumped me.
Okay. Well, we don't have an answer for you on that one, Jan, I'm sorry to say, but that's an interesting one. And if you've stumped the New York State DEC on this one, that's interesting. So
yeah, Jan, were they all intact? Were they not squashed?
Totally intact.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't really have a good
it's
answer
like they
either.
Crawled
wondering,
up.
Maybe a feral house cat.
But you'd see signs of that,
I don't know,
right?
Like,
possibly. They often will just kill woodland creatures and leave them lay.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
That's.
I don't know. I mean, where we are, there. I would have thought of that. Nobody has a cat up here. You know, there's maybe 12 houses in the 2 mile area.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting one.
Okay. Well, Jan, thank you very much. Sorry we couldn't help you there. 800-348-2551 to Ankrum. And Lynn, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. A couple times
over the years, we have found tiny, and I mean very tiny, fawn that have been left just outside of our door. You know, these just there, huddled, you know, just quiet as could be, so tiny. And then later, the adult deer, you know, after, you know, a while, has come back and they walk off together. But, you know, somebody told me they're sort of referring to it as if the mom has sort of just parked the little one, you know, somewhere that she thinks would be safe and quiet. And then she's off doing what the mom deers do. But, I mean, I wanted to ask somebody who would really know.
Well, that's a pretty apt description, actually. And so fawns are protected by their ability to hide, particularly in the early stages of their growth. They grow pretty quick, and so within a couple of weeks, they can be mobile and outrun a predator pretty well. But those first few weeks, they're really vulnerable. And what you described is exactly the strategy that does and fawns do in order to maximize their survival. The doe will find a place that's quiet and secure, and sometimes that is in the really neat spots where you get to see and observe it. And so I hope you took some good pictures, but you probably saw that coloration of the fawn with the spots. Everybody's familiar with that. And those kind of, they imitate sort of the sun specks that often happen in the woods, which could be allows the fawn to be partly covered by vegetation and really be cryptic in its hiding. And they'll just lay there motionless for a couple hours. That allows the doe to go off and feed. And of course, the doe needs that for its nutrition so it can come back and then nurse the fawn. And she might bleat something like, and call the fawn to her. And then the fawn comes running over and nurses, and then they move off and she drops them somewhere else.
All right, Lynn.
Oh, thank you. That's a mystery that's been sort of cooking here for a while. It's thrilling for us because they're so small that your hand, you know, would just more than cover their entire head.
Hmm.
So absolutely tiny. Anyway, thank you so much for that answer. It's great.
Sure. You know, one of the unfortunate things about the way that they behave there is because the doe's not present, many people mistakenly think that the fawn's been abandoned, whereas in reality, it's just doing what they're supposed to do. And so some people, well-intentioned, will pick that fawn up and think that they need to rescue it. And what they've really done is fawn-napped it.
Wow.
And so the best course of action when you find fawns like you did is just to leave it there. Now, sometimes, of course, you know, a doe will get hit by a car or something, and there will be a real abandonment issue. But that you'll detect over a couple days. And so if you see that fawn in the same spot for more than 24 hours, and it's not getting visited by the doe, that's a time to intervene. But if you just find it, see it, take a picture and enjoy it.
Lynn, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. To Johnstown we go. It's Chris. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My brother-in-law, way back when, was part of the original crew that reintroduced Canadian lynx in the Adirondacks, either as a student at Paul Smith's or ESF.
Okay.
Now, I know they were tagged or collared, and a lot of them came up as roadkill. And I'm just wondering, what is the population of Canadian lynx at this time in the Adirondacks?
Right now, it's zero. That didn't
zero.
Actually take. Yeah, those animals moved out and got killed, right?
Yeah, some were killed by rogue by vehicles, like you said. Others actually went back to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They moved out. The whole effort. This was in the early 90s, maybe. It didn't work out.
Why do you think it didn't work out?
Well, one, you're taking an animal that has a fairly large home range to begin with and is really dependent on having a good prey base and dropping it off in a completely foreign environment. And if it's not finding immediate food and familiar landscape, it's just going to start moving till it finds something. And that makes them cross lots of roads and they get hit and sometimes they just leave. And so there may have been kind of remnant lynx around in northern New York for several years after that, but without mates and for continued mortality sources, they just didn't make it. There was, though, we heard recently of a lynx that was spotted in Vermont. And so there are lynx in Maine and, you know, potentially in the long haul, there's some possibility that lynx will restore themselves naturally.
Chris, thanks for the call. And, of course, we have to mention mountain lions, right? This is a mountain lion sighting from Linda. About a month ago, right after a rainstorm, my friend and I were driving down the Northway from Glens Falls to Saratoga when we both saw a mountain lion on the side of the road. My friend is an avid outdoorsman, and I know what a mountain lion looks like, so please don't tell me we were mistaken. We immediately went online to see if anyone else had posted a sighting in our area. This was at mile 33 on the southbound side, about 3 miles north of Saratoga Springs, exit 15. We still cannot find anything anywhere that confirms what we saw. How concerned should we be that there is a mountain lion walking around very nearby? And that's from Linda.
Well, Linda, I would not be concerned at all. I would say there is a extremely remote possibility that you saw a mountain lion. It's possible, very low possibility, very low probability, but it has happened before in New York. And so 2008.
I thought it was 11.
Somewhere in that range, there was a mountain lion that was determined to have originated in South Dakota, that walked across the upper Great Lakes states, southern Canada, came down across New York State, was seen in the Lake George area, and was ultimately killed by a vehicle in Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And so that was documented, multiple sightings and evidences of that cat along the way, and determined to come from South Dakota based on DNA evidence. Since then, we have had no legitimate, solid evidence of mountain lions in the state.
But maybe, Linda, you're right. So thank you for that email. And this was from Betty, and then we'll go back to the phones. Betty's in Western Mass. Have skunks been hit by any illness? I appreciate skunks. They've cleaned out ground living beehives, which I appreciated, but I have not seen nor smelled any in a long time. And that is from Betty in Western Mass.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This one maybe.
I mean, skunks, like a lot of canids, are vulnerable to a lot of different illnesses, whether it's distemper or mange or rabies. Their populations will fluctuate with some of those disease vectors. And so I'm not aware of anything that's circling through the skunk population now at any greater rate than normal.
But me neither. And I've actually seen more recently than I have in the past. So
if you see a skunk, what's the best way not to get sprayed?
Walk away.
Don't run at it.
What if you can't walk away? What do you do?
If you have to handle the skunk?
I don't want to handle a skunk.
Okay.
I just don't want, you know.
So then there's lots of options for you to avoid the skunk.
All right.
If the skunk is in your garage, then open the garage door and walk away.
Okay. All right. That sounds pretty easy.
But you can actually, skunks can be fairly docile if you cover them. And so say you have a trap that you set for a woodchuck and you end up catching a skunk, and now you got to open the trap up to let the skunk out. Take a towel or a blanket and cover it, so that it makes a dark environment, so that and you can do that by walking up and throwing it over, and then let the skunk calm down. It'll probably spritz a little bit of smell. Yeah, Ray's giving me this crazy face. Like, there's no way you're doing this.
I'm going to call you.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done it twice.
Really?
Yeah, I just take a tarp and I walk and peek around the side and I walk up to the trap and drop it on. Then you can handle it like
amazing.
Anything.
Amazing. Yeah. DEC people are incredible. Let's go to Hillsdale. Larry, you're on.
Yes. Hello. Back in 1976, when I was back at the farm in Southern Columbia County, I was an avid deer hunter. And to my knowledge, we had no bobcats, no coyotes, and no bears. 2 years ago, there were 8 different bears spotted within a mile of the farm.
Wow.
And I consider myself to be a tree hunting environmentalist. In fact, I worked at DEC on Broadway as an environmental engineer. But I got to tell you, I hate bears. They're giant raccoons and just nothing but trouble. My question is, do you have any kind of program that's going to reduce significantly the bears?
Well, we love bears because bears are pretty awesome.
And apparently delicious.
Yeah, and they are delicious.
In the Adirondacks, the Catskills, and the Greens. They were fine then.
Yeah, so you're right. Bear populations, especially in Columbia County and the eastern part of the state, have increased. And that's not a surprise to you either. And they can create some challenges for people who are learning to coexist with bears. But we have hunting seasons that are established to reduce bear populations and maintain their populations at acceptable levels. And yet...
Unacceptable. unacceptable. That's the problem. It's too high.
Yeah, individual bears can cause some problems when they have access to human supplied food. So there's no doubt about that.
All right, Larry, thanks a lot. Sorry about that and everything. Let's go to Margaretville. Margaretville. Russell, you're there, right?
Yes, I sure am.
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, you had mentioned ground nesting birds, and I've noticed over the years, you know, when I was first here, and you know, around 2000, we had lots of killdeer on this property here. It's kind of a 25-acre flat, and we have a 30-acre flat adjacent to us. And now it seems as if I very rarely see killdeer, and I'm wondering if this is environmental related to temperatures rising, or whether because there's not a lot of, you know, excessive development here in Delaware County. And I just don't really see killdeer anymore. So I was just wondering about that.
Angie.
So how many
killdeer
years have,
population?
How many years have passed? I mean, is the vegetation
growing?
A
little better than 20.
Okay.
No, I mean, there hasn't really been any change in that the field adjacent to me is pretty much fallow. It's not being tended. Occasionally they cut hay on it, but not for the last couple of years. And my field hasn't changed at all. I mean, it's been a golf course, and I used to see killdeer running around on the driving range, you know, while I was picking golf balls, just running around. And I thought they were just extraordinarily cute and just a wonderful little addition to, you know, to nature.
Yeah, and they are. I don't know of anything specifically affecting killdeer. You know, you mentioned that one field is going fallow. They like open space, so maybe it's something related to that. They nest, as you mentioned, on the ground, sometimes in rocky. I've had one nest in my driveway when I lived in Potsdam. I had cones around it to protect it from the garbage man. Yeah, driving in there. But
nice.
But I don't know of anything specific, so I would guess it has to do with habitat, especially over 20 years. Maybe there's some changes that you aren't keying in on and these killdeer have. You know, it's possible.
All right, Russell, thanks a lot. Very quickly, we only have a minute here, but I have to go to Carol in Colony to figure out what's up with the orange groundhog. Carol, go ahead.
Hi, Ray. I was sitting in my backyard, and we get some deer in the back because we have woods and all kinds of wildlife. But this big orange groundhog came walking up, looked at me, and then turned around and ran. But he was so bright orange. What can you tell me about those?
Never seen an orange one.
You've never seen an orange one?
No. I haven't either.
That's cool.
Get a picture,
he
Carol.
Was beautiful.
Yeah?
Cool.
Yeah?
No, he was so fast, I couldn't get it. But
darn it.
He was absolutely beautiful.
He'll be back.
Had you been taking NyQuil?
Or wearing pink sunglasses?
No, okay, fair enough.
I mean, we have a lot of brown groundhogs, but this guy, or girl...
Hmm. Yeah, it's so very pretty. Likely just a variation of the coat coloration. Some
that is cool,
genetic
though.
Anomaly.
Yeah. Carol, we got to leave it there, but thank you very much. By the way, we got an email here from Andrew who says the lady Betty who was looking for skunks. Andrew says just visit Troy. So if you go to Troy, you'll find plenty of skunks. Hey, Jeremy Hurst and Angelina Ross, thanks for being on the show. That was fun.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
And you know we have so many callers still on the line. And somehow, in my genius of scheduling, I scheduled another one with you guys late next month. Let's do it again. Let's get all these callers who didn't get in. We'll do it next month. Yeah?
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Once again, thanks to Jeremy Hurst and Angie Ross for being here from the New York State DEC. As I mentioned, I think we have one scheduled for October 29th. We'll do it again. So if you didn't get through, hold that thought. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Lightning and Eddie Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Travel with Gene Gagnon. Hey, we'll travel to Troy and we'll smell for skunks. We'll see you too.